Good evening. It is election day. We are 2 hours in. Polls just closed across most of Eastern Ontario about half an hour ago. This program is part of the Alt Election 2025 National Election Project, coordinated by the NCRA. I'm your host, Mia Johnson. I'm here with my producer, Kinza Safar. Hi, Kinza.
Hi, Mia. It's 10 p.m. now, Eastern Standard Time, and we're live with coast-to-coast coverage.
Yeah, we are live from downtown Toronto. We're here at Toronto Metropolitan University's local campus and community station. We're broadcasting from Toronto, located on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabe, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat people. It's also within the territory covered by Treaty 13 and the Williams Treaty. We got a lot of people coming in from all across the country, giving us local updates on what is going on. This is alternative coverage you won't get anywhere else. This initiative is supported by the Covering Canada Election 2025 Fund in partnership with the Public Policy Forum, Rideau Hall Foundation, and the Michener Awards Foundation. Our executive producers are Barry Rook and Catherine Fisher. Our producer is Bailey Adams. Our West Coast hosts are Bill Collins and Peter Wainwright. Technical coordinator, Anthony Sana. And social media coordinator is Ken Zacharias K. Other contributors and journalists joining the segment include RB Frew. We have Tao Richiva, Bob Yonkman, Mickey Akrasui, Rob Haleman, Stephanie Hendricks, Jesse Wensloff, who we'll be hearing from in just a second, along with Danny Nesvardura-N-E. They are from CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Hi, guys. Danny, I'm so sorry. I hope I got your last name as best as I could there. Thanks for coming back on. The West Coast is really, it's been an interesting race to watch, and we could really be seeing some seats flip there. What can you tell me about what's going on, guys?
Well, thank you so much, Mia. This is Danny Nesvedarani of CJSF. And the polls in BC closed about 3 minutes ago. So I think, as per any federal election, it is yet to be seen whether these ridings will have an influence on the overall outcome of the federal election. But as we discussed previously, the narrative, specifically within the lower mainland of BC, is whether certain ridings, specifically ones that have been historically NDP strongholds, are going to stay that way. A lot of polling has shown that it's a bit of a toss-up for certain incumbents, such as Peter Julian of New West, as well as the NDP federal leader, Jagmeet Singh, who is at risk of losing his seat as well, but is yet to be seen.
Yeah, and just the way that results are starting to trickle in from across the country, the NDP does seem to have lost a lot of vote share in a lot of different ridings. So that'll be something we'll definitely have our eyes on as the rest of the results out here start to come in.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Looking at the total poll numbers, Liberals are up 17 seats right now. Cons are down 5. The Bloc is down 11, and that's where we are right now. We're going to be going to another journalist that is at a candidate party. Natalie Vilkoff is going to be coming on very, very shortly. We're expected to hear from her. She was able to speak with a candidate, and there she is. Hi, Natalie.
Hi. Mia.
How's it going? How's it going? What's going on?
Well, it's very lively over here. Everyone is watching and the results rolling. Yeah, so I'm with Jake, who's working for the NDP election for Norm Di Pasquale for Spadina Harborfront. So hi, Jake. Can you just introduce yourself and a bit more about what you do for the campaign?
Yeah, hi there. My name is Jake Barton. I am what's called a voter contact organizer on the campaign. So I organize the people who do voter contacts. That's primarily volunteers on this campaign. We've had, you know, well over 200 phenomenal volunteers, I think closer to 300 phenomenal volunteers. And then we also have some people who are a staff who do it full time, who lead the volunteers when they go out door knocking. So my primary job is recruiting and coordinating and sending out the volunteers, as well as picking what neighborhoods they go into to knock on doors.
Amazing. And like, they announced that the polls closed. So how are you feeling about that?
excited, but it's always nerve-wracking. It's, you know, I've worked on the provincial election campaign. It's not my first election. But at the same time, you're always like, yeah, you think you know how things might go, but there's always uncertainty. So it's exciting, but, you know.
Especially for the NGP party, how are you feeling about the results? And since they need 12 seats to maintain their party status?
Yeah, like it's no secret. This is a challenging election for the party. There's currently a red wave going on, and it's something we've really felt in this riding specifically. A lot of doors, people talk about, like, they love Norm. They voted for Norm last time. They vote NDP provincially, but there's such a fear of course, Donald Trump and ultimately down south. There's also a really real fear here in downtown Toronto of Pierre Poilievre and his conservatives and their agenda. So there's a lot of strategic voting, and I think this will kind of go down as a strategic voting election. So it's a tough election for the party, no doubt, but I think we're going to do all right. You know, we've seen the range of seats people think we'll get, and I think in that range we might finish a little higher.
And especially in our political climate now, like with uncertainty and bias and polarization, how do you like find the passion to continue in politics? And what motivates you like about contributing to this campaign specifically?
One of the things that always keeps me going is the reasons I go into politics is because I want to help people, and I see systemic issues in our society that need to be fixed. And if I were to get demotivated and if I were to give up, that would just empower the people contributing to those systemic issues, or it would just enable those issues to continue. So as tricky as it can be, and whenever you come across hard times, it's always important to sort of persevere and power through, because, you know, there's ebbs and flows in politics. We saw that prior to 2015, the Liberal Party was in a really bad, you know, state, and then they rebounded, obviously, in the 2015 election. So, you know, we might take this one on the chin, but I think it's a great opportunity for the party to sort of refocus, go forward, and make a comeback.
And, like, I noticed that the atmosphere is very, like, welcoming and friendly here, but, like, is it always that way?
Oh, yeah. We're like, I'd say we're always super friendly. And especially being a campaign office, the best thing that can happen is someone walking in the door, whether it's a new volunteer or just a voter with a question about how to vote, or someone just a question about the platform. Of course, here it's a party, so it's more welcoming than ever. And we're just excited to have people join us to watch the election results. And we thank everyone for their civic duty and for supporting the campaign for the last 4 or 5 weeks.
And especially for the NDP party, like, perhaps it's, like, demoralizing a bit, maybe. Like, even the leader, you know, has said that maybe, like, they don't expect a sweeping victory.
Yeah.
But how is that, like, just in terms of contributing to something, like, putting your passion into something that you know maybe won't win as much as you hope?
I mean, I wish a minority government or majority government for the NDP was in the picture, but it's just one of those things that we can acknowledge reality and know that that wasn't on the table in this election. And really, it probably hasn't been on the table since 2011. And, you know, like I said, there's ebbs and flows. And I don't think government always needs to be the goal for the NDP. I think as we've shown, not only in the last few years with supply and confidence, but as we showed in 1972 to 1974 under Ed Broadbent, as we showed before that with Tommy Douglas, the NDP gets incredible results for Canadians when we have just a handful of seats, and especially when we hold the balance of power. Even Jack Layton, that's another situation where there was a Liberal minority and the NDP supported them and got real wins for Canadians, such as our universal healthcare system.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for all your insight.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it for me, Mia. Thanks.
Thanks, Natalie. Thanks for bringing us there. Interesting to hear from an NDP seat as we hold out to see if they're going to hold on to their official party status this election. Next, we have Eleanor Rigaud, a Canadian-French climate activist, came to national prominence in Canada as a climate strike organizer. She was a leader for Toronto's Fridays for Future Strikes, a movement calling on students to miss school on Fridays to raise awareness for climate change. Here's her on climate, an issue that's been on the back burner this election.
You know, we can't blame people, individual voters, for thinking about their immediate needs. And right now, immediate needs are really closely threatened when you think about, of course, U.S. tariffs making an affordability crisis worse, even though we already had the affordability crisis. But I think really, I put the blame a lot on our elected leaders and on the parties who, instead of playing the leadership role of bridging the issues that are immediate to people and connecting them to climate, which we know we can do. We know that a lot of solutions to housing issues are also ways to keep housing more low carbon. We know that energy poverty can be addressed through renewable energy and efficiency. You know, there's so many little ways that they can be intertwined, but our political, those who want to be our political leaders have purposefully tried to shut that out and really tap into just this immediate kind of like immediate needs situation. And it's avoided, it's, I think it's prevented them from having to make commitments on the climate crisis. And it's been disheartening to see, you know, the ambition stay away from it. But everything I heard through the election campaign and through the debates ended up being somewhat related to the climate crisis. Like, we talked about pipelines and we talked about Canada's energy sovereignty compared to the US. It's like, those are end up being climate topics, even if they weren't labeled as such.
Thank you for pointing that out. What do you think is the consequence of us not really explicitly talking about the environment or climate justice?
My big fear is that whoever gets elected in parliament feels like they can get away with not doing anything on climate because they didn't have to make as ambitious commitments as they would have otherwise. They still all, or many of them still made commitments, and so we'll still hold them accountable to that, but I have a bit of fear that they might feel like, oh, we can get away with it. The other fear is, of course, for people who are just kind of tuning in a little more passively to the election and just hearing about all these polling saying who cares about what, not hearing climate and the environment might create the illusion that we've actually solved these things. Because if you look back at 2019, everybody was talking about it. If no one's talking about it now, does it mean it's been addressed? And unfortunately, that couldn't be further from the truth. So how do we, without wanting to, you know, add to the anxiety people are feeling, but how do we say, no, unfortunately, that climate crisis has not been addressed in Canada in particular, is particularly a laggard compared to the rest of the world when it comes to climate.
Thank you. And how have you felt about kind of each party's commitment and like what they're saying in relation to the environment?
Mm-hmm. There's certainly a wide range out there. I think throughout the platforms, we've seen either insufficiency in the ambition or a bit of a disconnect between the language being used that would, you know, suggest the ambition, but then the actions not being exactly strong. I was pleased during the debate to see several party leaders specifically talk about how Canada still uses public money to subsidize fossil fuels. And I think if I had to start somewhere, I would really want us to get to a place where all political parties can agree using our public dollars to fund the source of the climate crisis is nonsensical. And that would have been the bar that I wish for, but we didn't get there.
Yeah. And what do you think are like the kind of top issues that aren't being talked about? And what do you think should be top of mind for voters today?
Well, certainly when you think about Canada wanting to be strong in the face of US threats, like something people might not realize is there's at least three provinces in Canada that continue to import most of their natural gas to heat their homes, to heat their businesses from the US. We import actual gas from the US. That means that opens a huge vulnerability, and that was fully preventable. Most homes can now be heated better at a lower cost with heat pumps, for example, which use electricity. So that's one example. I've been also thinking about, you know, the fact that generally renewable energy, once you've installed it, that source of energy is there forever. Thankfully, no one in the US can control whether wind or sun reaches Canada. And so once you've installed your renewable energy infrastructure, it's there. You don't have to rely on pipelines or ports that go through the US. So realizing that those climate solutions can be a source of economic strength and independence, and kind of flip the switch on people who attempt to say environmental matters would slow down our ability to be strong, because really I see it as completely the opposite.
Amazing. Thank you for answering that. And lastly, like, if you wanted to say anything directly to voters who are tuned in today, what would that be?
Well, very grateful that everybody who's voted already has, and I hope everybody has. Regardless of what happens in the outcome, we have to remember that unfortunately, those who get elected, although they're called our political leaders, end up usually only following what we indicate. And so the leadership has to come from us. If we were dissatisfied with the amount of climate justice talk this time around, then they have to feel the pressure every day. It has to be through calls, through meetings, through protests, through media, but they have to feel the heat. We guide them, and it's not the other way around. They work for us. visit environmentaldefense.ca. We constantly have new actions that you can take, and we teach you how to contact your member of parliament if you don't know how to do that. So yeah, stay in touch.
Okay, pretty big development happening right now in the studio. I have journalist, award-winning journalist, investigative journalist Owen Thompson here to give us a pretty big development. Owen, talk to me. What's happening?
So, I mean, big news for any election is that currently CTV has declared that the Liberals have won the election, while the Toronto Star is saying they're projecting, as well as CBC and Toronto Star are all saying they're projecting, with the Liberals currently holding 137 seats, or projected 137 seats, to the Conservatives 95, which is, I mean, fairly big news, especially considering this was how fast this election came up on everybody. It feels like, you know, only 2 weeks ago, Justin Trudeau was our prime minister, and now we are going to be most likely with Prime Minister Mark Carney.
Yeah.
It's exciting stuff.
I mean, did you expect for things to be called this fast? We're about like almost two and a half hours into this broadcast, and we still got lots of coverage on the West Coast, lots of other polls still rolling in.
No, I can't say I was really expecting this. This is like, when I thought about this election, I thought it was going to be a lot longer, a lot more drawn out, and a lot closer, honestly. I thought that, you know, when this was announced months ago, with Poilievre, you know, leading by 25 points in January, that when this election was going to be coming around, that it was going to be closer to, you know, maybe a closer win, maybe a minority government for either or. But this is just, you know, it looks like it's going to be a majority Liberal government, which, you know, is in terms of Canadian history, a little unprecedented. Typically, it's, you know, Liberals are in for around two terms, and then Conservatives pick up again. So the fact that this is back to back to back Liberal wins is a little out there for the typical Canadian election.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you, Owen, a little bit about something we were just discussing off air. Was that several voting offices in Quebec's far north closed early due to bad weather? What can you tell me about that? What was going on?
Yeah, so several communities in the Nunavik communities up north in Quebec, which are, I believe, fairly remote communities. Please, anybody correct me if I'm wrong on that. But the communities such as Saint-Louis and Ivoyik, you know, are two of the seven communities that are reported to have had their polls closed early due to inclement weather, which, you know, at any... You know, you hear about this sometimes. I believe every election usually has a couple of communities, but, you know, it's never good. It's never, you know, fair, especially for these pretty remote communities to have essentially their voting rights being taken away. It's their civic right. It's, you know, and for them to just not have a say in this, you know, isn't, I believe, democratically fair, especially in Canada.
Yeah. Thanks for giving us the rundown on that. And I wonder how those polls closing early may have affected the election. We're going to be back shortly with an interview from someone with Elections Canada in BC. We'll be bringing you that coverage very shortly. Stephanie Hendricks is going to be coming on and leading that interview, a journalist on the West Coast. We'll hear from that shortly. Thank you, Owen, for joining me for this moment in Canadian history, it feels right now.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's always a wonderful.
You're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY, live from Nelson, British Columbia. I'm here with Kim Bader and Darren Davidson, and we're so lucky we have the fellow who is handling all of our media inquiries for all of British Columbia. He works for Election Canada. Live on the line from Vancouver, James Hale. Hey, James.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for waiting for us. And we're excited about having someone from Elections Canada. We're seeing a big, giant leap for the Liberals here on the East Coast. I know you probably can't call anything, but can you just give us a hint as to some trends you might be seeing?
Well, you know, I'll put this in musical terms for people. We're the roadies, not the band. Elections Canada, our job is to conduct an election and make sure that people who want to vote can get their votes in. How the turnout is interesting, but that's not what we do.
And do you have a sense of the turnout so far?
Only anecdotally, and for my own purposes. Today, I was in Vancouver, and I went to a polling station at the main library, and it was very quiet in there. But you know, I always tell people don't read those tea leaves too closely, because I also say my wife and I voted at advanced polls in suburban Ottawa, and you know, it was a Sunday. It was Easter Sunday, and there was nobody there. Mm. And we, you know, of course, we heard these stories of the huge lineups throughout the weekend. And sure, the numbers do, the 7.5 million people that did turn out advanced polls is a huge number. So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting, you know, when this wraps up, and we'll start to get preliminary turnout numbers tomorrow, I've been told. So that's going to be very interesting to see what the numbers are like. Because I will step into the role of just Joe Citizen. I'm just looking at my TV screen here. And it's interesting because it's been a long time in Canada since we've had such a binary race.
And here's Kim Bader, James, one of my colleagues here. He has something he wants to ask you.
James, sure. Do you have figures for us on what the advance polling numbers were in BC?
The turnout numbers?
Yeah, the advance polls and the percentage.
I don't have it in front of me, but it was high. I mean, it broke records right across the country.
Right.
So I think it was trending about 26% above last election.
Wow.
Yes. But again, I always say, remember, last election was a total anomaly because of COVID. So we're in kind of that zone where it's very hard to, you know, you're starting to get into apples and oranges.
So James, here in the Columbia, Kootenai, Southern Rockies riding, we had election signs defaced by here. And I just wondered if you've seen any shenanigans going on in this election, any tensions are running high, if there was anything like that going on elsewhere in BC or anywhere in the Elections Canada realm.
Well, I would say probably nothing out of the ordinary. This is my seventh general election since 2000. I don't, you know, again, you know, we'll get feedback and see some figures in the next few days from the people behind the scenes at Elections Canada, because it's not typically something we deal with in media relations. But just anecdotally, I'm not hearing any, you know, great spike above what I've heard before. And I've certainly, in the years that I've worked elections, heard some pretty crazy stories about the lengths people will go to, you know, create some sort of protest or just, you know, just cause nuisance.
Well, down south, where I'm from in the U.S., in one county in Arizona, election workers coming out to their cars were met with snipers from disgruntled voters. And so I'm very hopeful that that would never happen here in Canada.
Well, yes, let's hope not, by all means. The other thing to realize about the Canadian election, just as you know, I've been watching the returns come in on my TV and some grumbling about you know, how long it takes to turn the results around. But Canada manages to turn its results around almost without fail by midnight in the Eastern time zone.
And that's, so, you know, that's hand counting, right?
Absolutely, and that's the thing. So the first election I was involved in was just around the same time as the famous Hanging Chad election, so to the border.
In the U.S., yeah.
And I got a lot of interest from journalists down there about how our election was managed versus how it's done in the states, where every state gets to set their own pattern of voting. So there's an interesting correlation here. I've also had a number of chats with journalists about BC's use of computerized voting, which means you don't have to vote in your riding. You can vote anywhere in the province. And whether or not I see that coming, you know, for you know, Elections Canada. So that's interesting, too, because certainly since I started Elections Canada 25 years ago, oh, my God, 25 years ago, you know, there has been a lot of research done in terms of different types of voting. And you know, the three chief electoral officers now have studied in great depth with the parliament different means of voting, and we're still convinced that, you know, the pencil and the paper is still the most efficient, safest, you know, absolutely most secure thing, you know, that they've come up with. That's still, it may be antiquated or seem antiquated, but it's highly effective.
And how many actual ballots do you think you guys are going to have to process tonight?
Well, almost all the ballots get processed tonight. The only exception to that was that Elections Canada is able to start recording the votes of inmates and also the Canadian forces who vote from overseas. Those special ballots come into a separate section, and they can be counted, I think, 14 days before the election itself. So, you know, that's a fair handful of people. Those votes would already be counted. And then you've got the other special ballots, and they were, you know, they were very high this time. So, yeah, it's hard to say. You know,
there's 28 million potential voters, though. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, and like most Western democracies, we've been trending around the mid-60s to, I think, we've only cracked 70 once in the last 25 years. So, you know, our participation rate is still, you know, significantly lower than it used to be. By the way, the record for the highest participation rate, you have to go all the way back to 1958 with that crushing majority that John Diefenbaker. I'm teaching you some Canadian history here as we go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
John Diefenbaker.
But yeah, you have to go.
What
have
was
to
the
go
percentage
back to John
then?
Diefenbaker.
What was the percentage?
It was in the 80s. I think it was 82%. Yeah.
Wow.
So then, you know, again, there's, you know, every election, there's lots of discussion afterwards about, you know, should we go to, you know, the Australian system, you know, where you're mandated, you have to vote as you know, as being a citizen of the country, to, you know, the first past the poll and things. But again, those discussions are for Parliament. Elections Canada, you know, we facilitate the vote. That's what we do.
So, James, you've worked with other provinces before. Is there anything, I don't want to say peculiar, but is there anything that is, you know, special for about BC in your experience of a BC voter?
Oh, not really. I don't think so. Although I will note that tonight, they did, you know, for the first time in many elections, the major networks did not call the election until after the polls closed in BC.
Wow. Okay. So we're the last word. James Hale with Elections Canada BC, thank you so much for being with us.
It's been my pleasure.
We'll talk to you next time, and maybe you and I can talk about some jazz that we've shared interest with.
All right. Let's do that.
Thanks so much.
It's a date. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks. This is Stephanie Hendricks here with Kim Bader and Darren Davidson at CGLY, Kootenai Co-op.